the meeting, taking roll call. David?
Here.
Michelle?
Here.
Jeremy?
Here.
Joshua?
Here.
Janice?
Here.
Brendan?
Here.
Mark?
Here.
Holly. Holly is not here. So does anyone have a chance to review the minutes from January? Does anyone have any comments on the minutes from January? Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
So made.
Okay, minutes are approved. Do we have any comments from the public? Don't let him get tackled by a security guard. Okay, there is no public present. So I'd like to introduce our two new commissioners. We're very welcome and pleased to have them here with us tonight. We had our orientation right before the meeting. We have Janice Killen and Joshua Seas. We'll go ahead and let them introduce themselves, and then we'll go around the room, and if you want to say something about yourself, maybe how long you've been on the commission, and what's your passion, and what you do, or what you'd like to share. So let's start with Janice.
I'm Ms. Clinic. I am a retired public water watcher. I actually moved up to the National Year after the South. Because my daughter had a baby, and it's very important. So we stuck a pin at her house and worked with them in 30 minutes and fell in love with vegetables. So I have a lot of kind of arcane knowledge about disease estimates and stormwater and that they needed an outlet. So this is a way to kind of serve the public, use the knowledge that I gained in the last 10 years.
So I'm a climatologist and I work for the state of Oregon for the Department of Environmental Quality. My work is mainly about drinking water protection and forestry and agriculture. Do occasionally work on stormwater, and I tend to end up at the kind of intersection of law and policy and science at my job, and I was looking for a way to meddle not just in the state of Oregon, but also in my home state of Washington, which is like a natural effect.
My name is Jeremy Burnett. I've been on the commission for 2 years. I live here in East Vancouver. I'm heavy into the technology field with working at a company in Utah, so I live in Portland, Oregon, live in Washington thing. Also, mechanical engineering background.
I'm Michelle Gertz. I'm just finishing up, I think, my first year on the commission. And I'm a retired consultant, water quality, wetland sciences, and I live in the San Francisco area.
Kerry Armstrong, I work for County Public Works in the Clean Water Division, and I now manage the private stormwater facilities.
I'm David McDevitt. I've been involved with the commission for going on 3 years. And I'm in the middle of a second term. So.
A little more about yourself?
I'm an environmentalist at heart, and I have a great deal of concern about some of the issues with drinking water supply and contamination getting into it. I have a concern about the growth of the county and. And I sometimes jest that we're kind of in this role where we get to influence the growth of the county and we're playing, Sim City, but it's in real life because we're growing so quickly and trying to do that in a responsible way.
I'm Maria Lamana. I live in the Orchards area. I've got a background in forestry, business, and wastewater. This is my third term. David and I started about the same time. And I look forward to working all with you for another couple years.
Brendan Ennis, wrapped up first year as well, and second one, thankfully. I work as an ecological restoration for Eagle Lodge Water Solution Company, one of the field managers. We also work a lot in stormwater, so that's kind of the bridge coming over into this. And also live in the Washougal area in the rural part. Yeah, very passionate about it. Also, like David, seen a lot of the growth over the years of like being part of adding some input to how we do that.
Mark, do you
want to
say something? Introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I'm Mark Schneider. I've been on the commission, I think, for 3 years now. I'm a chemical engineering background, primarily worked in the paper industry for almost 40 years, and but I've done a lot of other industrial work, petrochemicals, biofuels, torrefaction of waste materials into fuels, that sort of thing. Welcome you guys. Sounds like you guys have a great background, and I really, really think it's awesome that you joined the committee.
So I'm Andrea Logue. I work for the Clark County Public Works Water Division,
I'm Eric Lambert. I also work for the Water Division, and I'm the outreach specialist.
Thank you, everyone. Okay, so right now we'll take the mic over to Carrie Armstrong.
Okay, so did I just sit here? Okay, I don't have to stand up. All right, so I'm going to talk about our private stormwater facility inspections, follow-up, and I understand some of the, or maybe the whole commission is interested in doing some outreach, maybe the home associations, and we'll talk a little bit about that. I just kind of wrote some rough notes down. I'll just kind of talk off the cuff. If you have questions, feel free to jump in any time. Do my best to answer them. So basically, we'll start with, there's about 1,200 private stormwater facilities in Clark County. We're required by our NPDES permit, sounds like what you've got some experience with, to inspect 80% of the facilities that are regulated by the permit. So there's about 1,200 total private facilities, a little over 900 are regulated by a permit, therefore required by a permit to inspect about 80% of that 700. Our goal is always to inspect all 100% of all the facilities. Our goal is to inspect 100% of the 1,200, but required by the permit to just do that. So keep that in mind. So, previous to 2017, starting 2008, actually, the Clean Water Division contracted with Public Works construction management inspectors to do the stormwater facility inspections, both the private and the public. And they did that for many years. And we would only really hear about the real problem facilities or ones that they got some feedback with and needed some more help, in which case I did some other work, but then I was also giving the task to kind of help those 30 to 50 kind of get them into compliance with the county's stormwater manual. And so those often were some NPDES related facilities, sometimes they were not. But at any rate, I'd work on kind of the problem cases, bringing them into compliance. We didn't really have a great idea of how many really were failing because we were hearing about the bad ones. We kind of had an idea, but not great. So anyway, in 2017, we decided to bring the inspections in-house and have the Clean Water Division inspect our own facilities since we kind of know what's going on. And the Construction Management Group of Public Works is still doing the public ones. We're doing our own private. So we used some staff from our natural resource specialist kind of science group, did a lot of the inspections. A gentleman, Bob Patterson, with the local source control, he did some inspections, and I did the rest of them. So again, the goal is to inspect them all. We completed all the inspections in 2017. A few of the non-NPDES ones swapped into 2018, but we're considering them 2017 inspections. So those are all completed. Now we are compiling the data from all those inspections. And this is taking a little bit longer than expected because we got a new way to do the inspections. Before it was all with paper and pencil, and we had sheets are printed out, they go out and pencil them, and then hand them to an office assistant, and she would do all the data entry, and it was quite time consuming. And anyway, so then Rod Swanson office said there's supposed to be a better way. And then he assigned Chad Hoxing, one of our research specialists, to work with our GS department in San Makata there. And she worked with Chad quite a bit, and it came up. I mean, she did the work, and Chad would test it. And now we had this, everyone had an iPad now, go out in the field electronically, do the inspections. It speeded things up, eliminated the need for the data entry of the paperwork. The mapping was way better. You just could look on the map on a shape file, you could go right to the facility. It was really hard with the paper before to find exactly where it was. This was great. Anyway, it was a great system. Now the problem we're finding is trying to get the data out of that inspection form. So we're working with our IT department, trying to get the data, get the reports we need to determine which ones need the most help. So we're thinking by the end of next week, we'll have the data we need, how many have failed. What we are trying to concentrate on are the NPDES-related stormwater facilities that are non-functional. So let's say there's 730 NPDES stormwater facilities. 430 failed, which is like the number we're coming up with. But just because they failed, it may still be a functional facility. And under a permit, the facility has to be functional. So that could be, if it's not functional, it could be a level spreader, could be below grade, but the water still being treated as it goes through. So I'm talking about functional, I'm talking about still providing the water quality treatment that it was designed to treat, and it's supposed to handle the flow control function it was designed to handle. So is this functioning, those things, but still need some minor defects? It was still a failed facility, but it may not reach the level where it's non-functional. So we're trying to determine which one of those NPDES-related facilities are non-functional. We're going to take that list, and that's where we focus our efforts on and try to bring them into compliance. So still working on the data, trying to get up.
Quick question, clarification then.
Sure.
Failed on the form means not having all of, or not built to...
Not being perfect.
We're not being not built to the as-built?
No, the built was built
okay.
Correctly, but it hasn't been maintained for so many years, okay. Or not being maintained properly, or being ignored for 20 years. Whatever the case may be, if it's not perfect, it's failed. But if it's still functioning, there still may be some defects that we'll pick up later. Sometimes the problem with that we found is if you keep ignoring that, then in 5 years, they become non-functional. Now, an HOA may have gone from a $700 fix to a $5,000 fix, and that's hard to reconcile sometimes. But we're running it by the permit. We're trying to get our hands around how big of an issue it is, and then we're going to attack the ones that are non-functional under the permit first. Then we'll probably move to non-functional outside the permit. And then we'll work on the ones that are functional but need to know. So that's kind of what the process is on going forward with these kind of facilities. In addition to that, there are facilities that aren't necessarily HOA control. A lot of commercial properties have facilities. Those we have another gentleman, Bob Patterson, who will work on those failed. There's 43 failed commercial sites. They're a lot easier because the business is there, or the landowner, we know who the landowner is, we know who the business is. You know, it's cost of doing business, so we can kind of press them harder to get it done. So there would be Bob's priority to get those in compliance. And they're just, if they fail, when I get those done this year, and get them back in compliance. So that's kind of another leg of private facilities. And I don't know how much you know, but certain municipalities will only accept private facilities, so offices like Camas, all facilities have to be private. The only ones that are public at Camas are the ones when Camas annexes part of the county that are public, because then suddenly Camas is responsible for those. But their code is all facilities are private. Now, King County has, if it's a commercial facility, it's private. If it's an HOA facility, it's public. They don't want any public entity or any private entity in charge of their facility, because the county's going to do it for them. You know, the fees are higher. Then more staff, but that's the way of doing it. In this county, how it works is, and maybe you know this, maybe you don't, but it's a developer's choice. So if I'm a developer, I want to develop a 30-home subdivision, I go to my engineer, I have him design the subdivision, the engineer puts in the facilities based on the impervious surface, and then the developer and engineer decide how much room that may take to make it private, or how much less room it might take to be public. So why would you go one or the other? So a public facility has certain criteria. They both have to meet the water quality and flow control standard, but there's an access issue that kind of requires for their own facilities. We need to have a good access, so a slope of the access has to be less than 50% grade. No slope can be greater than 3-to-1. It has to be completely fenced with a 15-foot gate on it. Well, that costs a lot of money, and it takes a lot more room. If I can go steep side and a steep entryway and not fence it, I might be able to sneak in another lot that I can sell, and I'll just get the facility to the HOA. So it's really the developer's choice, and that's how it is in this county. So there's about 1,200 public, 1,200 private, but that's kind of how it works in this county. Anyway, so that's kind of where we are with that. And I know someone went to, one of the commissioners went to a NEVA symposium, I think it was you, is that right? And I don't know where it was or what it was, but I know that a lot of municipalities are having a problem of who are these HOAs, who's the president, who knows they have facility, trying to get this contact. And it sounds like your symposium kind of was talking about this as one of the issues. And I've talked to other private stormwater facility managers in the state now that I'm running this, and they're also, they kind of run into the same thing. So there's the, what Erica is running with the stormwater partners as part of the Clark County area, actually regional as Longview, and I'll try to get everybody on the same page on how we can kind of work together to get HOA contact. Right now, we don't have a great list. So that's kind of, that's going to be part of the work effort. And I can be honest, a lot of times what I do now is just, there is no HOA, I just knock on doors. You know, do you have an HOA? Who's the president? You know, we don't have one. I moved a subdivision because I was told there was no one. I don't want HOA. There's a lot of that. And so it takes holding a public meeting. They yell and scream at me. And then I finally get them on board. And then I work with them to get the facility in compliance, and it costs some money. And it's a whole long process. We're hoping to find a way to make that easier. As far as your interest in contacting HOAs or being a go-between, I think it'd be great. I'm all for that. The more help in the contact, especially, getting who the who we're supposed to contact would be great. But I can tell you, I know that a lot of older subdivisions just don't have HOAs. It's, they had it in the beginning, someone's president, they move, no one wants to be president, and then they're gone, and no one starts it up again. And that's ongoing. I can tell you that now, the county, I can't make you have an HOA. I can encourage it. It's easier for you if the county. So let's say I've got a 30 house subdivision with no HOA, and I hold a meeting, and they go, okay, we'll do this for you because now we learned from our lawyers that you're right. But we don't want to form an HOA. I'm okay with that, just so you get the. Because I'm not interested in having you form an HOA. I'm just interested in the facility compliance. So they need to collect the money. Without an HOA, they have no legal authority to get money from their neighbor. With an HOA, they do. That's what I tell them. But you now can lien a house as a registered HOA to get the money from them. Otherwise, you're just begging and hoping they pay. So I encourage it, but we have no authority to make them form an HOA. Now, I will say that the new code kind of requires an HOA to be started from the beginning. So the developer has an HOA. And then as a builder or a property owner buys each lot, they're required to be part of the HOA. And so the plan is, or the hope is then, there'll be an ongoing HOA from the very beginning. And since we'll be on top of this more now, we should be able to know who that is and be in contact with the newer ones. So that's kind of, we saw the loophole, and we're trying to close that loophole. So HOAs in the future will be there for us. Yes.
And I guess it kind of takes part of the question I had. Is how are they preventing that situation where these facilities are being built privately tied to the HOA at the initial point, and then it drifts off into an ambiguous ownership, and you guys don't have anybody to contact? Are you seeing with this new regulation that kind of tracks where the responsibility is going to be?
Is it on the plat?
Well, the plat, I haven't seen a new plat that has the language who the HOA is.
Well, that just makes sense.
Will be owned by the HOA.
Instead, they'll say something generic like that. Okay. It doesn't say it'll be owned by the HOA and the president is so-and-so.
Yeah.
This person is responsible. It doesn't say that.
So,
as an attorney, not licensed in Washington State. I'm not going to offer legal advice, but I do have a question. And it's a legal kind of a question, sort of. The notion of property ownership is a legal construct.
Okay.
And the notion of collecting property taxes in connection with that is also, to a certain extent, a legal construct. And the notion of property records having requirements tying a particular parcel to an HOA seems like it might be a characteristic that our property tax collector, Mr. Lasher, and Alicia Topper might have some ideas about whether there are HOAs associated with a particular parcel.
So, yes.
So, I think it might be worthwhile for us to reach out to the property tax guys and ask them if there's a way for them to provide that kind of information that we might be able to accelerate our efforts in determining whether particular HOAs are in existence or not, or whether they should be in existence or not.
So I'll answer that. So yes, the HOA owns the parcel is owned by the HOA. It says right there. I know that information. But there's no HOA, so no one owns, and there's no taxes associated with the stormwater facility. So that parcel, because it doesn't have the capital improvements, is not a taxable lot. So there's nobody paying taxes, so there's no entity we can go to and say, oh, you're paying the taxes, you need to do this. It's a non-taxable parcel.
I guess that's the part that if I'm thinking about this is the facilities are being built on the, if you will, the collective judgment of our community to try to regulate the stormwater with them.
Right.
And then the responsibility is handed over to the developer to make the discerning choices of whether they want to make them private or public.
Right.
And if they make the choice to make them private and are not tying that private ownership into something that's transferable through sales, to where the responsibility is being clearly laid out to people going in, my question is, does that come back to the developer or the original purchaser? It seems like somehow the duty has been shrugged.
It has been. So the new code is requiring that legal avenue.
Well, the title, the property title, has any covenants, including the HOA,
right,
on it. So a title search would show that. And upon sale, if the title search is adequately done, it will show either a full HOA covenant or there can be covenants without an actual HOA formed.
We have that, yeah.
So, yeah. So there's legal documentation that goes with the ownership of the house.
Yeah, we have that.
But then you end up with one individual getting pinned with the responsibility of taking care of it without
the
HOA.
They all have the same covenant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, each parcel should have its own covenant. So it
but
ties
if
it to it ties it to the development.
The HOA, which is
right,
like a 501 something or another,
right,
it's something.
Right.
Well, it can
legal entity.
Yeah, it can.
So
I
just lost my train of thought there. It's going back onto your question, but anyway, forget it. Any other questions?
So,
go ahead.
For if I'm developing a parcel, is it? You made it sound like there's an incentive, a financial incentive, for a developer to want to go the private route because it's in some ways easier and less space intensive to design the facility.
That's correct. Right.
But the developer doesn't have any long-term responsibility. They need to put in an approvable private facility, and there needs to be some structure, HOA structure, built into the lots or homes they're selling that should, in theory, persist and take care of that facility.
Right, so initially...
But once the lots are sold, their responsibility is done. So
right.
They sort of have this economic incentive to choose something that is easier for them, but then there's no way to ensure that their responsibility for their choice is then kept on.
There wasn't then, there is now.
Okay.
That's the thing. We had there was a problem. It's remedied on paper. We'll see how it works in practice. But I know, as I said earlier, so a lot of problem before was the developer would build a facility. So how development works, the developer builds the roads, the sidewalks, the stormwater infrastructure. Then he starts selling lots. Sometimes the developer is the builder, but sometimes the developer just does roads, sidewalks, all the infrastructure, then he sells the lots. So what was happening quite frequently was the inspectors would sign off on the facility is built, it's in compliance, it's as the engineer plan said, and then here comes the builders, and here comes the trucks, and here comes the mud, and the facilities get totally trashed after that point. Then the county's behind on maintenance or doing inspections, and we come along 5 years later, and there even may be an HOA, but HOA may not know there's a response to this facility, but it's been trashed by the build-out of the facility. So what has happened, this started happening about 5 years ago, we now have a program in place where we are doing monitoring of the facilities every 6 months until the HOA takes control of it. So when the HOA has it now, it's in compliance all along because the developer's responsible until he turns it over, and we're making sure it's in compliance all the way to the end. So we're getting better at our system. It's not perfect, but the facilities that are coming on board now are at least in compliance when the HOA takes them on. And since we're tracking things better, we can stay on and make sure they maintain these. And so it just, we had a backlog of a lot of years. It's 1986.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
At the developmental stage, what I'm noticing a lot when I read the paper is a lot of requests and classifieds for adjustments on stormwater permits. And so I was just wondering, do we have somebody, I mean, you said they get inspected and that sort of thing, but do we have somebody from the Clean Water Division that makes sure that this is happening? So on the developmental stage, they are meeting the requirements and they are held accountable for all the codes and regulations that they're supposed to be abiding by.
Right. So the engineer for the developer will propose this plan to the fourth floor, and they do a development inspection, so they look at the code. Now, they're not re-engineering facilities. They're not looking at the engineering facility. They used to, but the commissioners decided that instead of having our engineers look at the engineering, there's already a stamped engineer, so he's responsible for design. So all we're doing is our development engineering staff is making sure that engineering meets our code.
Shouldn't they be responsible for the amount of impervious surfaces that are built in the engineering and developmental process and not
yes.
the homeowners and home buyers that come in?
So the developer and his engineer determine how much impervious surface there's going to be when the homes are built, and they design the facility based on that figure. And then the county looks at their figures and their design to make sure it meets the code. We're not looking at the engineering, we're just looking to make sure their plan meets our code. So then it's being built, and we have development inspectors all along inspecting the facility. They have a set of plans.
Okay.
They're making sure it's being built all along as code. Then the developer is done, they'll get a final checklist from the development inspector. You still do this, this, and this. Once that checklist is finished, that inspector signs off on it. The developer gets his bond back, so the county holds a bond until that's done. Then they release the bond to the developer, and then he starts selling lots. Now, it used to happen that the facilities got trashed, but now we're doing the inspections every 6 months to hold them responsible until it's over. Hope that answers
your question. So was the backlog created from back when there's kind of the budgetary issues and the inspections? There weren't as many inspections going on? Or how was the backlog created,
so,
and now how are you able to maintain
so that? So our permit's been ratcheted up every 5 years or 6 years. There's more requirements. Initially, we're just responsible for the public facilities. In the 2008, now we got to be responsible for the private facilities, so they started being built in 86. So I already have 12 years there where no one's even looking at it.
Right.
So that's the problem. Now, in 2008, why they're still a mess in 2017? A myriad of issues. But we started from behind to begin with.
But HOAs or neighborhood associations could identify those for you.
Could identify.
If there are some systems that are not operating. Functional.
The neighborhood association?
Or an HOA or a neighborhood group.
Could provide what?
Could identify systems for you that don't seem to appear to be functioning.
Stormwater systems?
Stormwater systems within the next, within the past 3 years or 4 years, something like that.
I guess I don't understand your comment.
If there's a stormwater system that never has water in it,
oh,
for example,
okay. Right.
Last year with 30%, you know, over normal, and you know, in contrast to this year, with, but if well, there's a stormwater system that's clearly not functional, so does somebody notify the county?
I've never had a call from a facility owner saying, please come look at my facility.
I didn't want to distract from if there was something else on the list that to cover for you, but I was curious what are kind of the common things you are seeing that put them out of function for you?
Well, when they haven't maintained it for 15 years, it leaves you a lot of blackberries.
Yep.
The grade is wrong, pots are plugged. The number one thing I tell any HOA is if you just clean out your sediment trap. So as the water comes into a pipe, and there's usually a concrete sediment trap, or it might be a rock riprap area where it dissipates the flow and drop the initial sediment drops out before it flows into the grass. I'm talking about swell typically. So if they just clean the, a lot of them are concrete, they just have a flat shovel, they just clean those out twice a year. You do that, you mow your swale 6 times a year, you're golden. You're going to save a whole lot of money down the road. So those are the two things I say are most common. So, but once that stops happening, the sediment builds up, it moves into the swale, now the swale starts to, it's high here, it's low here, the water starts to channelize, create a big rut. Now it's rutted, now it has to be regraded. That means you got to bring in someone to regrade the whole thing, take out the dirt, regrade it, reseed it, or sod it. So mowing, cleaning the sediment traps are the two big things on a typical bioswale. You know, keep the noxious weeds out, the big thing. A lot of blackberries in ponds. But now with the new technology, these underground stormwater filter vaults, they're out of sight, out of mind. They're not opening those lids. Those lids are really heavy and really awkward. So either they don't know they're there, they're not at the lid, so they're getting filled or failing quite often. And they don't know they're failing, but that's a, and there's no way to stop it really. They're just going to fail. And you know, it's every 2 to 3 years they have to replace these filter cartridges. And these prices used to be about $200 per cartridge, and now they're up to $300-$400 a cartridge. And so the price just keeps going up, and it's expensive. But basic things, just you basically clean the sediment trap, you mow your swale, and you're golden.
Mark has a question.
Yes, Mark.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
The question I have, and you may have covered this already, but of the systems that are failed but functioning in the county, how many of the what kind of percentage of those are private non HOA?
You know, we don't know that yet. We don't have to figure
it out. It's kind of an important piece of data, isn't it? Because once you understand where the issues really exist, then you can really develop a timing plan to address.
Yep, you're absolutely right, and that's kind of the data we're trying to get out of the iPads right now. We've inspected them, and I'm trying to get the data out that's readable. So it's beyond my capabilities, so I got to rely on other IT people to figure it out.
I got another question. Is there a feedback loop between, you talked about the underground stormwater vaults failing. At some point, is that information going to feed back into, I mean, I figure this is a common issue, not just in Clark County, but elsewhere as well. Is that going to feed back into the handbook, into the guidelines, design guidelines, and the options? Because it seems like it's just burdening the whole system. Some design is being identified as an option that's going high probability of failure, or such that an HOA or any other organization is not going to be able to keep it up to fast enough.
So what's going to happen is we'll inspect them, we'll fail. Over time, we'll get everybody on board, and they're just going to know every 2 to 3 years they're going to have to clean them out. So it's the design meets the code. The design is designed to do what it's supposed to do, and once we get everybody up to speed, they're just going to realize it's going to be changed out every 2 to 3 years.
So
I don't see the design going away because it's becoming more popular, not less popular.
What's the advantage of it?
The advantage for the developer is It's underground in a little box that you can put another house where it used to have a big pond and a swale. It still meets the, it still has to meet the code for water quality and flow control, so it does, it's still the same standard.
It's a very small, I mean, what we're talking about really though is, you know, in an HOA, in a large developmental, you know, community, okay, where the builders have been allowed to slap down cement and pavements and, you know, and everywhere, so basically we've lost a lot of drainage area. You know, we're talking about a very small portion of really what we should be talking about, and as far as because the water going into this, you know, storm facility and drain off. I mean, in my opinion, what we should be talking about is the developers and what other alternative ways they can, you know, use, what other things they can use to, you know, decrease the impervious surfaces. That is the main problem. I know that, you know, residentially and commercially, most folks are paying the same amount for these stormwater permits, whereas the commercial folks, you know, they're laying out how many, you know, square feet of impervious surfaces, and that's our main, you know, that's what we're trying to fight, right? Is the impervious surfaces and the pollution that, you know, that it can't see into. So they're paying the same thing. The water prices right now are just kind of out of control right now. You know, renters are paying for the impervious surfaces on home. And I know a lot of contractors are having to, you know, put in these ditches where it's just a barn on a 5-acre field, and they're paying the same amount as somebody who sets up, you know, 1,000 square feet of parking lot. So I think there's a little bit of an imbalance there. I don't know. That's just kind of how it feels. I think on some states, the developers need to be held responsible with engineering. Is where really, you know, we should be tackling those problems.
So I can clarify that a little bit. So ecology sets some of the rules, and the rules are if you're doing new development and you have so much, you're adding so much impervious surface, you're required to do some stormwater management. And there's certain rules you have to follow or guidelines. So some people have built a barn with a roof and now they put a driveway in, even if it's gravel, suddenly trigger that stormwater code. Well, they have to put a system in, and there's been a lot of issues with that. And it's costing people a lot of money because it has to be engineered when all it really needs is a splash block and some infiltration trench, and you're good. So there is some problems there that I think will be addressed. But basically, we're following what ecology tells us we have to do, and so we're kind of going that route. But there definitely has been a lot of pushback on that particular issue. As far as trying to get rid of the impervious surface, so I don't know if you had a low impact development discussion here.
Not in a while.
So sometimes we do talk. Many of you already know this, but so by code, because what ecology tells us, any new development has to provide low impact development techniques for stormwater if the land can handle it. That's their first option. So if I'm building a 30 home subdivision in East County that has really good infiltration rates, most likely I'm going to be building a subdivision that has infiltration capabilities on site and water to go right down to the home is built. So that's eliminated a lot of piping things, so stormwater facilities are going to fail, so it can go right in the ground right away. However, if you go in the west part of the county where the infiltration rates don't handle that, they're going to have to look at that option first because they're required to, but they're going to have to show us that infiltration is not going to work on this site. And then once they prove that, then they're allowed to go another direction, which is, you know, swales and ponds and the rest or that kind of thing. So they are going to this. They understand that impervious surfaces direct a lot of water at one place once. If you can infiltrate on site first, that's better, and that's the direction of where everything's going.
Yes. Are there any more of those developments that have like the grandfather rules that may have been approved in 2008, but they didn't build till now?
Yeah. So there's a rush before the new code took place. If you got your approved before that, you're approved and you can build it 3 years from now and it's still proven to be okay. Yeah, that happens. Yeah. I think it's a big thing, and I live in Portland, but. There's a big article in the paper about, you know, Portland's booming, as of Vancouver, huge, a lot of apartments. And the new code in Portland is, if you go to an apartment with X amount of apartments, you have to provide X amount of low-income housing. starting this date. Mm-hmm. And so everybody submitted their applications, and the paper said the applications absolutely came to a halt once that deadline hit. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, certain regulations, you know, people rush in to get things approved and then can come delayed when they build it. And there's still some of those being built today that were approved under the old system.
I want you to say, because the conversation's been going around, but once you have your data and you know which of the facilities are failing, not functional, and that you wanting to make contact, I think our outreach group, that's one of our goals.
Right, I understand.
I have some names of homeowners, but they're all kind of the new ones, so they're in the newer developments. At least we can start educating them and let them know about the maintenance issues, how it's going to cost you less in the long run if you maintain it. But trying to get into those older ones where there's no homeowners, once you get that data, I think we'd like to meet with you and see what we can do to help get that word out.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great. So it's going to be a lot. I don't know. You know, I think it's going to be a lot of, honestly, I think it's going to be a lot of knocking on doors. A lot of letters, but that's fine. Yeah, we need to help.
Just open houses and neighborhoods where there's a lot of those older neighborhoods without HOAs.
Yeah. So I've been fortunate to be involved in the Clean Water Commission for the last 2.5 years or so, and I want to say thank you for taking us out on the tour in 2016, and Ron Swanson took us out this last year in 2017, and it was a great opportunity for me and for other commissioners that attended to learn a lot about our stormwater systems. And as I'm understanding, maybe you could just do a quick kind of glossy overview, because we've got a couple of new folks here. That my understanding is that we have a lot, there are probably 6 or 7 different types of stormwater facilities that are different from each other. You know, the underwater, the underground collection is one of them, but, you know, even Ron took us up, or Rod rather, took us up to the close by to WSU, where there was a flow monitoring that was going on in one of the streams. So if you could kind of do a quick glossy overview of some of the different types, that would be really helpful for me. And for us, if you could, yeah, just, I mean...
Do you want to schedule that for another meeting, perhaps?
Yeah, or I mean, if you know them by heart, maybe you know. But I mean, but if you don't, we'd love to have you come back and do that for us, because some of it could be instrumental.
So there's a basic like 4 or 5 types of facilities, but I can tell you that each one has its unique problems. It's incredible how the engineers can use the same design and twist it around, and each one is different and it functions differently, and it's amazing. So you can have a basic thing is a bioswale and a pond. That's very typical, but you think that's going to look all the same. But I can tell you there's 800 all different looking swales and ponds. It's goofy.
Right.
Widths, slopes, everything. Anyway, you know, it's swales and ponds. There's the...
Here, let me help you out here.
Yeah, get a... You can do it. It's on our website. There's a lot of them.
And then another question that I had is that, so you had indicated early as you were starting that there were about 700 facilities that need to be inspected to a certain extent annually. And I'm doing a quick math in my head and thinking, okay, so there's 200 working days. That's about 3.5 different facilities every day. That seems like a huge undertaking, of course, depending upon how well staffed we are to do it.
You can do about 20 in a day.
You can do about 20 in a day.
Yeah.
Are they currently checking?
Yep.
And how many staff do you have inspecting?
2, 3, 4, 5.
I'd like to just point out that the work that you did with the HOA at Phillida, where you guys went out and talked with the person where they thought they had a system where there was stormwater flow, there was a problem, drainage was a problem. Anyway, they're very, very happy about that and very pleased with
being able to make that connection.
Right. That's,
so
that helps.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's going to be some positive feedback that will, you know, come your way as this develops.
No, they get, I get positive feedback once I get them on my side. Sometimes it takes an effort, but eventually
the money.
They like me at the end.
Has the water actually tested as well? I mean, alongside the you know, flow control issue, is the water ever tested so we know kind of what's going on and where we might be needing to look a little?
So they used to require the permit. We used to have sites where we inspected the facilities, inspect the in and the out as a requirement. We did that for several sites, but it's no longer a requirement. So actually, Ecology is doing that on their own.
Ecology?
Yeah, Washington Department of Ecology does stormwater sampling in their facilities.
And that should be on record, shouldn't it? Somewhere on the county website?
I don't think we have it on our website, but I honestly don't know.
I can't find any data.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. But I know we did it for a couple of years at several sites. If you want to get Andrew, she can check. Andrew, you get the monitoring center to find out where that is.
I don't know if Ecology would put the full records on. I mean, I don't see why you wouldn't be able to request it, but I think the amount of data for all the facilities, I'm just guessing they wouldn't be putting it out there.
I think they were summarized in reports.
Yeah, they usually give a broader summary, but versus like a site-to-site, we probably have to do more of a request.
But I was just telling Holly that if she gives Andrea a note, I'm sure we gave you the data when we were doing the sampling of our facilities, if you're interested.
Yeah, absolutely. And then comparing that with, you know, maybe the rivers, I just might be intelligent thing to do.
We're still doing the monitoring of the rivers. Yeah. Of the creeks.
Not to distract too far, but I know data collection from the inflow and outflow of the water can really be hit or miss too, because you have so many sampling dates that you're going to the facility, but when you're seeing a rain event and what's flowing, what type of factors would be doing that?
Carrie, on the vault and the dry well, do those have to have a UIC permit in addition to any other?
In the dry well, yes.
But not the vaults. The vaults are not UIC.
Depends where they discharge to. So it goes through a vault, and then it could go into a UIC, or go into a vault and go in the county system, or go into a vault into a pond. It depends where it discharges after it leaves the vault.
Okay.
A lot of them go into UICs, a lot of them don't.
Okay.
It depends kind of.
So it's passing through the vault, going through the filter cartridge, and then going into some other place for infiltration.
It usually goes through a flow control structure, because you have to control the flow as well. So the underground filter vault provides the treatment. And then it goes to flow control structure that controls the flow out to where it's going next, whether it's a UIC or a creek or the county system.
So these are the examples?
Go ahead. I have more questions for Carrie. Kind of segue here.
Wait to Eric.
I guess the only thing I wanted to say, which is really more just my P's and Q's disclosure wise, is that my company has discussed reaching out to private facilities as an area. We already work with developers in Gresham to try to keep them up to code with the city for the whole thing, and it's something that we've discussed with the county. So at whatever level that we're doing that in Clark County, all.
So do you work for?
Be up front.
What do you work for?
Sound Native Plants, which is based out of Olympia, but our team's down here. We do about 2/3 of the biosoil maintenance for the city of Portland and a large portion of it for Gresham. And Gresham started working with the developers that are in that interim period where it's still under their private control and having to meet the code before they transfer it over. So we were aware of the situation in Clark County of lots of facilities that were overgrown, sediment inloads, and people having to look out to a lot of the homeowners nearby not wanting to do it themselves. So had discussed the opportunity of looking into where we could help with that area. So that's a different hat.
I didn't realize this was a, I thought this was answering the question that, so this is into the great segue.
It's a little bit
both,
right? Are you finished, Greg?
Let me just say that the reason why I asked about this, Eric, was because to a certain extent it's reflective of the amount of effort that it takes to do the inspections that you were just talking about. You know, looking at a dry well might be a 5-minute exercise. Looking at a bigger, you know, situation may be a significantly greater amount of effort.
Eric. Yep. Yeah.
And so, you know, to try to help homeowners, and I think that was a good question, like, can a homeowner, you know, could a homeowner ever identify these problems? Well, this is kind of how we're trying to help that. There's the Regional Stormwater Partners website, as you guys might know. I might remember. I've been working on updating that. It's been quite a project. It's a lot of information to go in there. But it's not live yet, and so there's still a few tweaks I'll make on the back end in regard to formatting. I'm getting some feedback from the other jurisdictions now about what information they want added. Because pretty much it's from the previous website, just migrated over and changed a little bit of format and reorganized in such a way that it doesn't require a user to click through so many times to get to the information that they're looking for. Hence these kind of like drop-down boxes and stuff, which were each its own page previously. This is the Stormwater Partners website where people can basically go, okay, you have a treatment wetland, okay, well, I want to learn more about that. They can go there and they can see additional elements, which I would say you need to add that content right there. You can kind of get some clues about when maintenance is expected, and then you can get some general tips about what you can do if vegetation is a problem or you realize there's a lot of sediment in there, maybe a mosquito problem. And we're also going to link to the maintenance guidelines from the manual too, so that people will have a printable record guidelines about what they're going to do. But as you might know, I wanted this website to be a lot more than just the stormwater facility maintenance aspect of it, because I think there's a lot more in the stormwater world that we can talk about. And so I added a section for businesses, so people can come here and learn about some of the key things that businesses need to learn about, whether it's ways that they can prevent pollution. We have this great publication here, and we have a lot of the other ones. Yeah, that's scary there. Doing these other things, that some videos on hazardous waste stuff, and really just trying to build this website out quite a bit to include a lot of different topics that I think are going to be really helpful to people. And we have it organized in a different way. You kind of saw the homepage there. This is going to be rotating and have different topics that we can highlight if we want. And then, have these different kind of audiences that we have. If it's the residents, we're going to talk about some of the stuff that that people can be, on the lookout for, some publications here, and trying to link it to publications in Spanish, if we have those, and also try to link to some cool videos. There's a lot of great materials out there. A lot of it comes from the Puget Sound, because they have something that the Stormwater Partners called Storm, which is, as you can imagine, I think there's probably close to 100 jurisdictions involved in that. So they can really put a lot of resources together and develop some really cool stuff. So I've linked to some of that. Some common questions, how do I maintain my stormwater facility? Report a spill or find volunteer opportunities or prevent pollution from my business? I plan on determining these through the analytics of the website, find out what people are going there for, most commonly, to try to make the path of least resistance, to get the information into the user's hands. This is pretty much a big part of what I've been working on. I just sent it out, I think, last week sometime to all the other stormwater partners who are in the jurisdiction to get their feedback about content and ways to improve the website. And I'm really hoping to get this to go live as soon as possible, because I think it's going to be a big improvement.
Can you share that link with us so that we can start poking around in there?
I can share this link. And again, it's not live yet. It's still
no, I get that. That's
sandbox. So I can share that with you. If you guys have comments, and that was the biggest reason why I wanted to show this to you guys.
Right.
So far I've really only shown it to people that are in the world. And so it's really helpful to show it to people that are maybe not so surrounded by it.
When you do share it, just remind us that it's not live and
so don't share
keep it private.
I'm happy to share that. I really am. I would love to get your feedback.
you know, poke around if a particular area of it interests you or like suggestions.
So
appreciate that. That will be the ultimate domain. No, yeah, the ultimate domain. We're going to keep the same domain, stormwaterpartners.com. And then, yeah. And then we also have another domain name that I just purchased for the Don't Trip and Drive campaign, which is fixthoseleaks.com, there was Fix That Leak, which is like the tagline for the Don't Trip and Drive. The .com domain was being held for ransom by somebody.
When I first came in this evening, so I had seen a program. I was talking to Marie about it. I'd seen a program up in the Seattle area, because in Seattle the stormwater and sewage systems are connected to each other, I think. And they were talking about instituting rain barrel programs so that during the heavy rain season they're not overloading the sewer system with stormwater, which in turn was causing polluted water to get into the Puget Sound or into some of the rivers and streams. We don't seem to have that problem here, but I was asking about that because I understand that sometimes there's a little bit of a mix-up when the guys are out there working on the pipes and they'll connect the wrong stuff to the wrong stuff, and then we can kind of accidentally create problems.
That's happened before, and sadly, a lot of times they don't find out about it.
Like, yeah, later.
But yeah, so some of the other stuff, I guess, just to update about outreach, I've been doing a lot of like Don't Trip and Drive contract stuff. So I went to the county counselors and they approved the contract from Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board to do that. I think it's with the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board right now, getting their signature. And then sometime this week, I'll be getting the professional services contract with the Watershed Alliance to start doing the work. And we've already been doing some work because we got a pre-authorization letter. I've been working on like getting materials updated. And I think the Watershed Alliance has been working on starting to contact some shops. And we're determining some locations for some of the leak check events. That's really exciting to get that going. Some other stormwater partners stuff. Carrie had mentioned Bob Patterson a couple times, and Bob and I are meeting with someone from Gresham on Friday to talk about what they call a SCAP program, which is a storm drain cleanout assistance program, which is a really novel idea that they have done in Gresham and I think Milwaukee as well, where they, if you are a business and you got to clean out your storm drain system, the price can range from like, $100 to like $700 for no apparent reason. What these organizations or what these jurisdictions have done is they've put out kind of a bid and say who can do this for a reasonable price, and they've gotten some people to say, okay, yeah, I can do every one for like $70. And then you can contact all these businesses and say, hey, look, you need to do this, and here's a good deal to do it. They've really made a lot of progress in getting businesses to comply with some of these, some of these requirements. And even like these catch basins are kind of like a stormwater facility, right? They're regulated as such for businesses, and so that kind of ties in there. The other thing that we've done. The next meeting is going to be, is it the 18th? April 18th, I think I sent out, I don't know if I have you all on the list, but I can forward that to all you guys about the next Stormwater Partners meeting if you'd like to attend.
18th of April, I think.
Yeah. Something that Carrie, we also designed for Carrie, our colleague Jane designed a really cool door hanger. So when Carrie goes to try to talk to some of these folks, we have a snazzy door hanger that we can leave on their door. Your inspection's overdue, contact us. And so I think that can be a fruitful tool in getting contact with some of these people that we need to in a friendly way. Some of the other outreach things that we're doing I'm not sure if I told you about this, but there's a storyteller named Will Horniak who lives down in Portland. He's done some work for us in the past, and he
there used to be an organization, the Watershed Alliance, with WSU Extension, and that's where I first met this guy, and he came to one of the volunteer appreciation events and told these incredible stories. Professional storyteller, animated, just really a lot of fun. And then I saw him again, and he was doing some stories for the Green Schools program where he talked about the four R's, reduce, reuse, recycle, and rot. And I was like, wow, this is great. You know, he goes into schools, and so I said, well, maybe we should do this for some schools in Buck County, which we've done. And we developed a list for him, so we've got a contract with him to go into schools and do assemblies, primarily with elementary schools. Yeah, a lot of fun. And I haven't gone to see one yet, but I've seen his other stories. I plan to go out and check them out one of these times. But I created a list for him I wanted to reach out to and prioritized it, basically looking at schools that aren't really already involved in clean water activities, whether it's the watershed monitoring network or whether they're involved in green schools or not and certified in school grounds or water. And so we identified a bunch of schools who seem to not really be as engaged as we'd like to, and so you've been able to reach out to a number of them. Metal Glade, Seventh-day Adventist School, which is really cool to get into some private schools that might not be having this type of education yet. Tooth Valley, Sunset Elementary, Geyser, and I think his next one's going to be at Gardner sometime soon. So that's been a lot of fun. If you want to hear his stories, just tell Andrea, and we can get you one of his CDs.
What's his name?
Will Horniak.
Will Horniak.
Yeah, that's something that I put it on in the car when I'm driving with my kids. other than that, we have some outreach events coming up. The Small Acreage Program is holding the Small Acreage Expo on the 7th of April. And so that's kind of a cool event. Usually I would like to be there, but I've always been having these conflicts. But I'd encourage you to go, especially if you're a landowner or managing some small acreage. It's kind of one of these programs, like kind of like a toned-down small farms, the OSU Small Farms conference, where you know you have a bunch of different they have 40-hour and 15-minute sessions, and you can choose different topics you'd like to go to, whether it's like, I think there's someone like increasing pollinator habitat, and drainage issues, or improving riparian areas, and things like that, you know, so there's a mix of kind of clean water messaging, and also kind of small farm stuff, but the overall impetus is here is we want you to be a steward and here are some ways that you can manage your land in a responsible and healthy way. It's always a lot of fun, and that'll be at the Heritage Farm, too. And that same day, which prevents me from going to that event, will be in front of the trees planting, which is going to be in North Salmon Creek, Nevada, and West Hazelbelt. So this will be our third Friends of Trees planting. I hate that they're on the same day, so I'm going to tell you about both of them. That's just going to be impossible. If you haven't volunteered for a Friends of Trees planting event, I highly recommend it. It is so much fun. I have never seen an organization bring together community in the way that they do. So they meet at 6-8 Church on April 7th, and I think they have somewhere around 80 trees, trees that people have signed up for so far. You go out there with a crew. Earlier in the end of last year, I became trained to be a crew leader, so I can also go out and lead crews. It's kind of a neat way to have a very captive audience to talk about stormwater and street trees. It's also just a lot of fun, too. So definitely check that out if you're a volunteer. If you're someone that lives in North Salmon Creek, does anyone live in North Salmon Creek? I think the drop-dead deadline is like next Monday to be a tree recipient. So if you know someone, that's a great word. I didn't invent it. That'll be happening. And if you want to encourage anyone to get those tree trees, it's a great deal. It's like $35, and they come and plant your tree for you. So can't beat it. The following weekend is going to be the Kids Fishing Derby, which I'm really excited about because we've never been to that event before. So that'll be on the 13th. Oh, that's Friday 13th, isn't it?
Friday 13th.
Okay, so yeah, Friday, April 13th, and then Saturday the 14th. And so I'll be there. We'll have a table there. I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And
I'm really excited about this audience, too, because I think that one of the great things about this program is they really do a great job of reaching out to underserved communities. And so it's not like, you don't have $50 to go, do this. It's like, oh, yeah, come and we'll hook you up and get you engaged.
Where's
it helping? It's at Fine Line
Pond. That's what I thought.
Yeah. And so I'm really excited to...
Is that the Eco Fair?
No. The Eco Fair will be right near there the next weekend. So, that will be the following weekend on Earth Day, or Earth Fest is the CPU event, which is another great one. Holly and Jeremy were there to help out last year.
Great place to talk about water quality.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Both of those events, I'm really looking forward to being there back-to-back weekends. I would extend invitations to all of you if anyone wants to come and help out or hang out at the booth and see what we're doing. Whether you want to help out with outreach and talk to some people, or if you just want to come by and see what we're doing, see what kind of things we have set up. Definitely check those out. Is the kids' fishing derby, you can just drop by?
You have to register.
You have to register?
Yeah, you pre-register. There are some walk-ins, but they're already registering the kids, and they have a website.
Yeah.
But it's like 5,000. I mean, it's huge. Yeah. It's nice.
There's a lot of people. I'm really excited.
And there's a lot of, hooked utilities and other, they have a lot of crafts. They have a lot of, there's food. So it's usually a really big turnout. And they give them the free, I think it's like $5 where you can get a scholarship, but you get a fishing pole. So there's a lot of people teaching these young people to fish just to get them out and to start, enjoying nature. So.
Yeah. And then we'll probably have some kind of a contest or some kind of thing that a few people can win some of these awesome water bottles that we got. Look at that. This is a salmon made of raindrops. How brilliant is that? Someone designed it from our Pieto department here. And we've been doing some social media things and trying to get that out. So speaking of social media, put your hand up if you like our Public Works Facebook page. Okay, everybody, take out your phone right now.
I saw that today because I'm
happy to share.
Okay, if you have, good. If you haven't, this is one of these action moments. And it's Clark County WA Public Works, and you can follow us there. You can actually win one of these water bottles. There's a one of these fun kind of contests that we're doing here is for. It's called Close to Clean Water, hashtag Close to Clean Water, and so I'm kind of taking photographs of something that...
Clark County WA what?
Public Works.
Public Works.
Yeah, Public Works is under the, or Clean Water Division is under the Public Works umbrella, which is great. We have, a couple of contests. One of them is this picture here. Of the water bottle, which I love because it's got the message right there, only rain down the drain. If you're on Instagram too, you can follow us. It's the same thing, CarkCoWA_PW. If you know where that picture was taken, just go there to that park and take a selfie there and tag Public Works and you get a water bottle like this. The other one, the Close to Clean Water, I'm looking for that post right here. That's kind of a fun one. Oh, here we go. I kind of take an up-close photograph of something. Do you know what that is? And if you take it, you know what that is? You go and you take a picture of it, and on your Facebook page, just tag Public Works, and then you win one of these bottles. So far, nobody has won, and this has been out there for a couple of weeks. It doesn't matter. There may be one outside of this building. I don't know. The idea here, what I'm hoping, and what I really want is to be able to get people to start posting some of the messages that we want on their own network so we can use that network effect.
So share. Please share.
Yeah, so share it or tag someone. Hey, I bet you know where this is. Win this awesome water bottle. Because, the other picture there is...
Share it to groups.
Yeah, this water bottle is made in Yakima, keeping dollars in Washington. How cool is that?
That's
yeah, that's it.
Thanks, Eric. Yeah. Have you brought your kids to the fishing derby?
No, I've never been, but I kind of want to bring them this time.
Yeah, I think it's here.
No, no, it's not too late.
Okay. Yeah.
You should pick your slot.
Okay.
Do they cap their registration at some point?
Yes, they do, just because it does get full.
Okay.
And they only have so many fishing poles.
Absolutely.
And then they give away bicycles and stuff. At each age group for that hour span, they have prizes. So they get trophies and everyone's doing that kind of thing. And
yeah.
People there helping them do the fish.
I'm really excited about that. Like, it's such a cool nexus to be able to have, not just like, oh, I'm talking about clean water, but hey, you're fishing.
Yeah.
We're
talking about clean water.
I like my fish to live in clean water because I like to eat fish that come from clean water. Eating fish from polluted water is like kind of nasty.
Right. It's way harder to catch fish in polluted water. Not so many of them.
I can show you pictures of some.
Pretty common these days.
Yeah.
They usually float.
So you're going to have some pictures of mutant fish on your boots.
Okay, that's what I've got.
Thank you.
Okay. So that's a busy April.
Yeah.
I hope you get some time off.
Yeah, I'm thinking about maybe taking a leg again in April.
And then what about the Clark Beauty Home and Garden right there? Is that too much?
That was a little too much. I wanted to do that, but because you need to be there all day for 3 days in a row, and that's a lot. So, you know, it was good, and you know, maybe I'll look into it more in the future. You know, I think in the future I'd like to look into getting an AmeriCorps to maybe help out some of this kind of stuff, which would be a great kind of thing that they'd be able to really help out a lot with, or maybe even in the future do it as a Stormwater Partners kind of outreach program.
Okay.
So we can get some of the partners involved.
When Mr. Horniak goes and does his thing at the school or at one of the schools, is that kind of an open thing that we might be able to attend? Or
I don't know.
Is that kind of
question.
A school-only thing? Or
it's typically a school-only thing, but I could look into that. I know that I requested that myself and Jane are going to go see one of them. But that's probably more up to the school. Potentially, the next school gardener, which is a private, maybe you could say alternative kind of school, already very environmentally focused, they might be more open to it than a public school, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, if you happen to ask them, let us know.
Okay.
I'm available to go to those kinds of things, so, you know, if it would be beneficial, I think it would be a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, it is really cool to see him engage these kids and get them up on stage, and totally animated. A lot of fun. I mean, we've had a couple of teachers that just been like, and principals, writing us emails, just independently thanking us for, offering this kind of thing to the school and telling us how much, the kids liked it, and then how it would like also really fit into to some of the lesson planning that they're already doing, and really reinforcing the science work that they're doing at a young age.
And if the CD is available, I'd love it. I'd love to hear it. Even if it's a loaner, I mean, I'd bring it back.
Yeah,
thank you, Eric. So the next thing on our agenda is goals and objectives. Is that part of our working groups or action plan?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll do a brief overview. So one thing we talked about last year, people that weren't here, is, and if you don't want to stay, you can enjoy yourself and enjoy some family time. Or
thank you.
You're welcome to stay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Terry. Good to see you again. All right. See you too.
Let us know when you get that done.
I'm going to grab one of the CDs first. Anybody else want a CD?
Yeah.
Okay. How many do you have?
We have, I don't know,
bunch?
A whole bunch.
It's okay.
We haven't given
yeah.
How many CDs did you now?
I need to get this in a digital format.
So last time we talked about having more of a objectives for the year, for an action plan of actually accomplishing how we're going to do it, and then some long-term goals. So within our three groups, I have this up in Google Docs, Ms. Lamar, since you can't see, but you had some action plan items that you brought up for the report. And then
yep.
Research group. Identify interface opportunities in community groups, communication, investigate at least 5 other county system development fee structures, support the 6-year capital plan, and identify approach to connect with lawn care providers. That's just in summary some of the things. And then for the next group, next page.
Oh,
there's 3 pages. So for the public outreach, we want to attend at least a minimum of 4 neighborhood association meetings, plus at least 2 other community meetings. We're going to create a list of homeowner associations and contact the residents to engage in outreach. We're going to participate in the Climbline Fishing Derby. That's just a few things we jotted down. And then partnerships. Pretty much would like to meet with the people tonight and start formulating some goals. And we need to get our objectives, too. I think only we kind of have them there, but we need to tweak them and make sure that's it's kind of copied from what we did like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So let's update it and get it all together. So though breaking those down in 3 groups. And what about the whole objective for the commission? Does anyone have thoughts on that, or would you rather see it in 3?
I sort of think that we should have an overall, sort of an overarching, just maybe a couple of objectives for the whole.
Okay.
Because, you know, they may drive other interest groups or working groups down the line.
Okay.
As we find that they other actions are needed.
Other thoughts?
I just concur.
Okay.
With what Michelle said.
So a total group together, what we should be working on as an advisory board, and then breaking down in our little groups and formulating some plans. So do we want to break down in our 3 groups right now and start talking? I mean, we've got like a good half hour or so. Are there any other items we want to bring up before we break into our groups? Because that could kind of...
The only thing I'd add, Marie, is the thing I would encourage folks to think about is the primary kind of vision and mission of our commission here. And so I think as we're looking at this, as you think about it from a more global perspective, I don't know if you all have a copy of the bylaws in front of you, but I think to me there's a lot in this bylaws, but I think the first sentence, the key thing is, that we're really here to ensure the integrity of the water cycle, and then we do so by recognizing the importance of the community's needs seeking and recommending actions that can be implemented and raised with methods that are achievable in our conditions. And so, you know, it's kind of set the stage here. You know, one of the things in a research group that we became sensitive to last year was that the capital planning cycle is just being, from a county perspective, being able to deal with maintenance issues was really limited by the budget process. And, you know, we may have periods, economic conditions, where we don't have the financial means to really do all that we need to do. And so there's, when we begin to kind of modify approach, to my way, it's being really...
We lost you for a second there, Mark.
You're coming out.
For a longer basis.
It's like that scene in Forrest
Gump. Oh, yeah, okay, so, yeah, I just think, once again, I just encourage folks to look at the mission and the bylaws to as we start thinking about our individual groups' goals and objectives.
Okay, no, that's great.
Well, we could actually break out three from the mission statement overall. So we're recommending practical actions to achieve healthy watersheds.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeking to emphasize healthy watersheds as opposed to any individual component. So there may be others who look at individual components, but we want to look at the whole.
Okay.
And in part achieving this through cultivating a more informed community.
So you said three things, Michelle.
Yeah, the
healthy watershed.
Recommending practical actions. That was the first thing. The informed community was the third thing. No,
that's fine.
That's a good one there. Yeah, we can reconstruct them.
And emphasize healthy watershed.
Yeah, that was the second one, as a whole.
Almost system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so actions, and that's because like Mark brought up, there's limited budget, so what are the priorities in the maintenance? It's kind of what you guys were working on last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, practical actions.
Yeah.
So the second is whole watersheds.
Looking at the
integrated system, and the third one is more through the informed community.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like
yeah. Well, actually, I copied and pasted it when I inserted this in the room. So if we think of that as sort of the overarching, and then how do each of these contribute?
I guess the research would be doing recommending the actions, the partnerships, kind of the healthy watersheds, as a whole, and then outreach is informing and cultivating the community. So that really plays out well.
So if we wanted to, like, because of the ads that I see, I'm really interested in as far as, because I see a lot of publications about corporations requesting an adjustment on stormwater. Whether it be the fees, the permits, the ordinances, what have you, I'm just really interested in what's like going on there. That seems like it would be more of a public outreach thing, but I'd like to attend a few because it's public, it's welcome always, and you can throw us public comment. So, is that something that would fall under partnership?
Attending the county meetings, the planning meetings.
Yeah, the ones that are they're just requests for comments or any anybody, like a lot of permits that have been stormwater, anybody from the stormwater group invited to come, and I was just wondering, does anybody, you know, show up? Like, who, you know, because I know a lot of the classifieds, you can put out a publication and say, you know, you must respond at this about in a time, and if you don't, then they get whatever it is they ask for. That's how the classified publications work, so I was just wondering how, you know,
bless you.
Regarding our stormwater fee permits and that sort of thing, and ordinances, if I'd like to see who's going, you know, if anybody shows up to those, how that kind of stuff works, so.
So the stormwater fee and permit proposals would be a county commission or planning commission hearing,
yeah.
Right? But the individual permits are special examiner hearings.
Okay.
So
maybe I'll be more specific. I'll find one. I'll ask about it. Maybe just an image.
Because could be either. And so there is a question of what our role is in sort of
we have to look into that more.
Okay. Well, the next time I find out, I am I just fell for it, so I will definitely bring it in next time because it's an interest on me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, great. I just told Andrea, but whenever you're done with your CD, just pass it along to someone with kids or a teacher.
Awesome.
Something like that.
Thank you, Eric.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
I think I mentioned that in some of my feedback earlier when we were putting together the plan. It was less for a group, but more as a broader objective, at least a thought I had. And I know our time's kind of a bit of a premium when we're in on these evenings, but trying to organize a little bit more, if there was anything to do with our time here, or even just how you shared that article recently with regard to the water flow statement, but the education that happens for us, both on the issues that are impacting our area, the nuances of how, for myself, there's so much of I'm able to bring what knowledge I have, but then there's a whole lot of learning of like, oh, so that's how that works in the county, and this is how that budget goes. Increasing our own education so that we can be better representatives when we're speaking with the public, and then also better at the type of feedback we can provide to the council and that type of just kind of ongoing education for us and improving our understanding of stuff. And then also, to some extent, looking at when we have identified issues, where those are being dealt with elsewhere, too.
Absolutely.
I didn't get into it when Carrie was here, but I think I've mentioned it in a previous meeting, but, you know, the city of Puyallup, for example, that was one case where they did all the development and they decided, mm-hmm. Well, we'll just have each resident take care of their bioswale up front. And it was a complete failure. And they paved them all over and don't even have them anymore. Mm-hmm. There was no way they could do it. So that was just kind of an example piece of it. And I think it would be nice to kind of be able to incorporate part of our time, a small portion of our time, either at our meetings, but definitely taking an effort to try to pitch in more of that education time outside, since we only meet every 2 months. And I don't really know where to put my finger on a lot of that. I was like, I know myself personally, I'm trying to understand a lot more of how it's working in the county and like where our effect can actually be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's more of the county policy and process, like the planning commission, and
mm-hmm.
I understand the review process, but yeah, I see the engineered plans for the sewer, but you know, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable.
Right.
So if we,
for example, I've been a big proponent of the natural spaces used for stormwater filtration, but it was during our tour with Swanson that I realized that that doesn't meet their state permit requirements. They can't use it for that. So it's like, well, as much as I like that idea, it's currently not helping the free form.
Or knowing what Carrie was saying, that, you know, they do, because if they follow the permits, the burden isn't so much on the developer. I mean, they have some leeway, so of course they're going to choose what's going to be best for them, you know, if they're not environmentally willing to, you know, lose some of their land, whatever they need to do to make their profits. It's kind of a fine line, but what's going to work and what doesn't work, and
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of history behind that to know.
There's another piece here, too, along with that fits in. If we're looking at things on a whole watershed basis, for example, you know, the LID movement is very much toward infiltration, you know, which is great, helps the base flow in the streams and so forth. But there's chatter going on right now in next door, so which is one way to see what's going on sort of neighborhood-wise. There are down gradient properties that are being affected because there's more seepage. And apparently there's some research, I haven't put my hand on all of it yet, that suggests that there's a 50% increase in the flow, some of which is base flow to the streams, but other comes out as seepage onto down gradient and lower properties. So there may be some implications sort of from what we're doing that that needs to be thought through as well.
Well, and that part personally to me is the thing that's always interesting to try to know, particularly if we're speaking with the public, because as somebody who has been personally passionate about a lot of environmental issues and fallen in a lot of those circles, I've attended plenty of events where you can get a lot of just talking points, but the person who comes to talk to you from the public is concerned about the water seeping into their basement. And you can talk to them about healthy streams and rivers all day long, and they think that you just are not paying attention to their issue. And it doesn't help get them on board at all with the objective and trying to find that. So that's the type of thing that I think is like, okay, that'd be great for us as commissioners to have some background in that one too. Good.
So are these problems that are coming up because of an excess of flow during the rainy season?
Or part of it is because of increased development area that's been developed, and infiltration is more directed and actually more rapid. The volumes are higher. It's not intercepted by trees
sure.
and everything else.
Right,
the more
right.
It gets there.
So
and so it's the flows that are they're receiving
mm-hmm,
are increased,
mm-hmm.
seeping out of the hillsides mm-hmm. and the basements.
So does that open up a door for us to be having a conversation? You know, in Seattle, for example, where they have a combined system, they're doing this rain barrel program to mitigate some of the excess flow. Is that something that we should be looking at as something to consider recommending so that we mitigate some of the flow that creates or contributes to part of that problem, even though it's not exactly the same as what Seattle's contending with, it may be still an appropriate thing for us to consider?
Absolutely, because at least it would reduce it on some scale the amount of rain that falls on your roof, and within like, I think it was two hours of straight rain can fill, I believe it was a 1,000 gallon tank, just from one household, 2 hours of rain. So I know they fill up quickly, but it will decrease the flow. And I think here we still have a problem with people being allowed to, on their permanent residence, to be able to just catch their own rainwater. I mean, I think that's, I mean, I'd like to know whether that's true or not, because I think it would be highly ridiculous if not allowed to catch rainwater.
Well,
in Colorado, you
can't. It was not allowed. The rules have been changed by the State Department of Ecology.
Okay.
So you can collect rainwater.
Okay.
You still can't divert streams or anything
right.
like that.
I know there's a lot of homeowners that are still unaware of that. It's
off your roof.
Off your roof.
Well, so, not trying to distract, but I think that this type of conversation would be a really great thing for us to set a time, at least each of our meetings. Unfortunately, they're only every 2 months, so maybe we could do one at a meeting and one online if it were monthly. I'd like that. That we just had a topic, and we could go around and have whomever just pick whatever that topic's going to be that month, and we can all just have a little bit of a conversation. So as we go through the year, it's like, you know, we have one on infiltration, and we have one on, the person can pick the topic and find an article or some info to start the conversation, and then kind of go through with that, and we can have an allocation of the meeting if we're able to.
Okay.
But I think it would be good throughout the year.
Yeah. But it's interesting knowing the development community and their demands, and of course, you know, the politics of wanting to bring revenue into the county versus who's really looking at a watershed as healthy and, you know, the cost of doing that. I think, Michelle, if you could find an example of some municipality that's actually doing both, making people happy and keeping a healthy watershed. It would be interesting.
I'll look.
Yeah, I mean, there might be some out there.
Right to mind that have been established for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some that are in early stages.
Of trying
to very
promote that.
Yes.
So
but
how
they're not tried and true yet.
Yeah.
A couple thoughts on that. One is looking at taking it from a fiscal conservatism approach and saying what is going to result in the lowest long-term cost to the community. So if we're bringing in a bunch of revenue from development, but what you're doing is you're just creating a bunch of problems for 20 years down the road that are going to be a huge cost burden, that's not a fiscally conservative approach to take. And so there's that way to look at it. And then another way to look at it in kind of a dollars and cents way is through the lens of ecosystem services. There is a lot of value we derive from healthy watersheds that are very one way to value that is what would it cost to replicate this with infrastructure or some other form of human effort, and it's generally much cheaper to do it with a healthy ecosystem than it is to do those same things. I work with the example of drinking water treatment. You know, a healthy forested watershed is way cheaper than treating polluted water to drinkable levels. So just going forward, that's something to consider when it comes to the money question. What's the economic value of the healthy watershed?
And that's the type of thing I'd like all of us to be real sharing.
Does the state have its own NEPA, like California CEQA and the
NEPA? Yes, Washington State.
And but is it so? In that, isn't watershed impacts a part of the analysis when they have development?
Okay. For each of the developments, they just go through a CEQA checklist. And literally,
they don't do an analysis.
Oh no! Yeah. Literally, it's a cut and paste process. Unless somebody is looking over, and who knows what they're looking at, is looking over the results, there's really very, there's so much, it's very little review.
So they really just check the no impact on watershed, and then it just goes through, or this is how we're going to mitigate it, we're going to do biosphere over here.
We'll meet the stormwater regulations, is
right.
Basically what they say.
I see.
And that's the secret check.
That's a very development friendly
yes.
Way to do things.
Yes.
But we're working on it.
You know, one way I would have to, I think Brendan's the discussion around the most possible solutions to the issues is right in tune with that. I think these are good ideas. In the absence of having a fully informed group, the way I would think, at least initially, these first few years here, I think we should be thinking about how do we integrate with or evaluate what the county is doing to try to address these issues, so that we can provide recommendations to either supplement what they're doing or kind of question, get them thinking in a different way. You know what I mean? So we don't have to be the technical experts right now. We have the serving experts. How do we integrate and become additive to their purpose?
I was thinking that actually when Carrie was talking about trying to drill down who's the HOA, who do we get in contact with, and that's the perfect kind of thing that we can do that you've already started.
Yeah. But like Mark was saying,
right.
Knowing their policies, their processes,
right.
We need to be educated on that so that we know we're not asking for the moon. If it's never going to happen, then we're just spinning our wheels. But being educated on the whys and knowing
the limits
and the what's the best.
But I think we also need to be mindful that, you know, our research mission and recommendations to the commission. So when we see some opportunities for improvement of what the county is doing, we should make those suggestions as well. You know, so I think there's a, you know, again, we don't have to be the technical experts, but I think I like what Brendan's saying. I think that's a great idea. We do everything we can to educate ourselves in better and better ways, and I think that will become better at what we're doing here. But again, in the meantime, I think as we assess what our objectives are for this coming year or this year, then we really need to be thinking about, you know, what the county's doing and how do we supplement it within the context of our mission.
I wonder if, I'm not sure we're going to get to actually breaking into work groups and doing goals and objectives in this meeting, but I wonder if we take that to an offline meeting outside of this and bring it back, if we could also think about what questions or what areas do we need to be educated on in order to accomplish these,
okay,
that we first racked up, and then bring those back to the next meeting. And then we have a list, and we maybe sort of figure out better how to address. I mean, some clean water will be coming in and doing presentations. Some we can individually do some research or in teams do some research work on and present something as you suggested and do it that way.
Yeah, like that. Identify the areas.
Mm-hmm. So it would be, you know, what questions do we have that. Where do we need information in order to make this, you know, effective, reach this goal?
Okay. So that's something we can bring back to the next meeting, which isn't until May. But do we want to?
Yeah, I think we could do that in the research group. I'm not sure. I feel pretty confident in. And our ability to do that and offline feedback.
Yeah.
And I think what we would do then if each group does that, then we can kind of think about next meeting how to synthesize that and do a couple of key objectives or goals that the group has in total.
Okay. So if I'm hearing you suggesting that we meet offline with our groups and come back next meeting with some key objectives for the commission.
Yeah, that'll work. If there's a lot of disparity between those, then some groups may have some more homework to do before the next meeting. But I think that's one way to get to the final result.
Okay.
Like that?
Yeah.
I like that.
And in terms of having the most flexible of venues. There's a piece of software on a web browser called Zoom.us. And Zoom.us allows you to have up to 40-minute meetings when you have more than two people in attendance. And so we could have really short half-hour audio-video meetings with each other from remotely for up to a 30-minute period of time. And it's absolutely cost-free.
Okay.
And if it's just a one-on-one with two folks, you can actually exceed that time frame unlimited. But the idea is that you have kind of a face-to-face from remotely. It's sort of like a webinar kind of a tool, but it's a really great way to do it. And it doesn't have a cost to it. So it's really kind of neat. And you can schedule it ahead of time. Send out the invite, you just click the link and you're connected to each other. So somebody takes the lead in scheduling it, and then you can kind of negotiate some of that but it's really a cool tool. I've been using it for one-on-one meetings, and it has the ability to record as well, so it records all of the audio and video. You can do screen sharing, so if you have an article to share, you can share the article from another web page. It's really got some cool features, and so I'd like to offer that up as something we ought to consider doing. And then we can put those, if we do record the audio and video of those meetings, we can share it back to Andrea, and Eric, and if it's pertinent, you know, it could be, you know, kind of archived as part of the public record.
Yeah, in fact, David, it's, the meat of this conference call that, you know, I'm joining you guys on is, in fact, one of those services. We're only using the conference call feature, but the webinar is available as well. And, you know, I've got two of these lines, and so you guys can feel free to use one of my lines as you need it.
Yeah, I've used a couple of them, too.
Thank you.
Preconferencecall.com, and there's one other one I've used.
Yeah. So it's great because we have alternatives. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Hangouts works great too. It doesn't. I don't think it has a recording function in terms of archiving, but it can handle quite a bit of users too.
Yeah. Zoom.us does, but yeah. I mean, I think for the benefit of the county and the public record, I think we'd want to record it and make it available as part of the public record. For Andrea to decide or Dean Benning to decide. But.
Yeah, I guess there's a question of the status of these.
If it's not a quorum, then it's not a public record. So.
Right.
Yeah, I think we talked about that, Andrea, before we started the research group, and we decided that it didn't need to be recorded. So we haven't recorded any of our discussions, and in fact have not really even done a great job of taking notes. But, you know,
what?
We have new people here, we don't.
Right, it's more about what you're reporting back to.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I think
exactly.
It's up to the group to decide how they want to, how much, and it, for a particular meeting too, it could be something that you want to share and have documented.
So, everyone give us a little time.
Are we ready to move on to the working group?
Yes, I just want to wrap up and make sure that we all know to bring to our next meeting our key ideas and areas that we think we could ask the Clean Water for more information and educational, and just kind of get some narrow down those objectives. And then what about the off-month discussion? Is that something that we want to do by sending out an article and then just emailing feedback or FaceTiming feedback? Or
I don't, yes, absolutely.
Okay. And I'll have to make sure you guys get set up on your commissioner Gmail before you leave.
Okay.
Yeah, so that we're all on the same page. Okay. You guys did?
No.
Okay, yeah. I might be doing an orientation, but it's kind of rushing through. Okay,
so
let's...
For that off-month meeting, will it be will we set like a... So much of this, would it be a, you know, will we set a Wednesday, first week, or something like that? Or is it going to be a floating...
Life routine? Do you
I was thinking if it was... I mean, my thought initially was if the goal is information, that we don't necessarily have to be present for it. We can share,
right.
Share as much as that. And then I thought just to kind of keep it, the ball rolling, and I don't really know if I want to have like assigned homeworks, if it was like, it's your month to do one. But I thought something on that line of particular topic or particularly with the county understanding it. But
why don't we see what the topics are?
Yeah.
Because it might run them one way or the other.
Oh.
Right.
Like, if once we find those objectives, maybe find some articles that would help educators, and then we could share those meeting.
Well, as the group comes back, each working group will come back with questions that they think need more research. And if when we look at all of those together, it's, you know, some of them may be best in person. Some may be real easy to do online. Yeah.
We can have an offline discussion more than a forum, that it was just emails going back and forth on an article that was sent out, if we've gotten out for the meeting.
Not if it's emailed, if it's not in person. My understanding.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not. I have
Outlook.
Yeah, I can
Oh,
So this was off-month meeting wouldn't necessarily be a Zoom or a Hangout or something like that. It'll just be email discussion, or was the idea to have like a...
I think the idea for that part, for me, was kind of triggered by the article that Andrea sent last month with the study they were doing on the salmonids and the zebra fish, and I just thought that was really interesting. It was great input about, you know, this clear effect that the stormwater was having on these juvenile fish and stuff. And I was like, that's a great little piece of information for us to have with our work and communicating with the public and stuff, too. And I thought it'd be really nice if we had an objective of trying to make sure that we are digesting one of those a month. Just something in that realm.
Well, some stuff can have just come up, though, and our custom has been to share it, either get a sample to send it out to everybody, or, you know, just send the link ourselves to the Gmail account, because some of the stuff won't fit neatly, but it's real pertinent. It'll fit neatly into some of our areas that we need to investigate, but, and sometimes they stimulate some comments, which constitute discussion online.
Right, and I don't know if you know, I have to put myself in this position of being the person that, like, if by the 15th of the month, nothing regularly come up, all like, go.
No, I don't think we have to regret.
Well, let's find something for us in April and then send it out and see what happens.
Okay. Yeah, I know personally for me, a lot in being a part of this is just on the county level, understanding more of its function, because that goes back to, you know, what Mark was just mentioning there. It's like, okay, well, what can I really contribute that's valuable information to the people that are already doing the work for the county? I can give an idea, and they're like, yeah, I share that opinion too, but that just, I can't do anything about that. I want to be able to give them feedback that falls within the realm of the system they're already working with. Whether I have an opinion about that system or not, what can I give them feedback that works in that system? So that's the part for me to understand a lot more within this organization. And then there's just kind of general education about the subject.
Okay, we've got 5 minutes to meet with our groups. Basically,
this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.